This is the EWN Radio Network.
There's got to be a balance between the environmental balance. We're going to have the health balance. And it's definitely, you pull on one string and everything in the world changes.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor, from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's just my honor to be with you here Friday night, 7 p.m., and every week we have a brand new episode. I just want to catch up because, you know, I just enjoy summer so much. Last week, I went to this fabulous farmer's market. You know me, if you've been listening for any time, that I am just a farmer's market fanatic. And they had some things that I had never seen before. So that was a lot of fun. And the cool thing was asking the farmers, okay, I've seen this word, you know, I've seen this vegetable, whatever, how do I cook it? And that was so fantastic, getting it right, shall we say, from the farmer's mouth on how to cook it. So that was a lot of fun. I came home and I tried some of them. One of them, I'm trying to remember exactly what he called it, but it was the shoots of garlic. It was like, before it flowered, it was really super tasty. So we have a fantastic guest on that we're going to talk about food. For a matter of fact, we're talking about food today because this is just the time when there's so much available, regardless of where you live. There's just so many things available. In fact, I saw zucchini flowers and I'm like, that I've heard that's really good, but I was so intimidated. And so today we're going to talk to Susan Hoy. And she is just the master chef from culinaryskillsandnutrition.ca. Calling all the way in from Canada. So thank you so much, Susan, for being on the show and calling in from Canada to be a part of it because I'm so excited. I met Susan at an event up in Canada a couple of weeks ago, and she was the caterer chef for this massive event, and I was shocked at how she pulled it off. There were probably 40 of us, and she kept us all super well fed. It was just fantastic food. And she doesn't make it about eating completely or the next trendy food. She focuses on long-term health, on being in condition and disease-free. She does that by combining her truly unique training and her personal journey. She's a classically trained chef and has extensive knowledge in the food manufacturing industry. Well, we can talk to her about how scary that is. And after turning her health around several years ago, she has a family history of diabetes, heart disease, and waking up to the reality we only have today that spurred her to lose 100 pounds. Oh my goodness, that's amazing. Plus, she watched her mom live with a debilitating autoimmune disease that finally took her life. So after she and I chatted about her amazing food at this event, I said, you got to be on the show. So welcome, Susan. Thanks for being on the Autoimmune Hour with me tonight.
Well, thank you, Sharon. It's an absolute pleasure that you invited me on.
Oh my goodness, where to start? First, let's tell us a little bit about your journey of what had you become just this food expert, because I think a lot of us want to be, but taking the leap, wow, what spurred you? I mean, I just read in your bio here about losing weight and your mom's debilitating disease. I think we all sort of have that in history.
We do. Most people do have some sort of personal connection to the way we are. And it's those connections that make us real. So yeah, my personal journey, a huge part of why I do what I do in my business is connected to my mom's journey. My personal story, though, on cleaning up my act, if you will, before that, it was a real eye-opener that I got a true picture of how I was living. A lot of people say that they've got one foot in the grave. But the term that I actually used was I didn't have just one foot. I was up to my knees in my grave.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't have very much quality of life. I had so many health things going on with me personally that it was kind of a gauntlet where I threw down, and I had a huge catalyst in my life that made me realize that we do have only today. And that was when my brother was killed. And I took a real hard look at where I was in life. And we were sitting around my mom's kitchen table at the time, and we were just relaying stories of my brother. And I stopped for a second and I thought to myself, if this was my time to go, would these same people be sitting around the table with the same great memories and stories and everything? And it really woke me up to the fact that I wasn't living life. I was just coping and not coping very well. And so I kind of took the bull by the horns, and little steps at a time. It actually happened very quickly, but making little choices every day, I shifted that weight really fast. And through the process of losing the weight, all my little diseases that I had, I was pre-diabetic. I had high blood pressure, high cholesterol. I had gout. I was like a woman with gout. That is almost unheard of. My doctor didn't even think that I had gout when he diagnosed it. And eczema, psoriasis, alopecia. It was just such a long list of food-related illnesses. And so just that journey, that 10 months it took me to lose my weight, every day was just a step forward, and every day my health improved as well, right along with that.
Fantastic. Now, you said food-related illnesses. In my healing journey here, I found much of, medicine has very little nutrition training, and not one of them has said, Sharon, any of this has to do with your diet or your gut or your nutrition, until I started seeking out those people trained in it specifically, based on only what I had found in doing my own research. How did you find out that these things were related to your diet?
First and foremost, it was proof within the pudding, no pun intended, for sure, was when I eliminated certain foods out of my diet, there was such a direct correlation between how my body responded. Like when I pulled dairy out of my diet, my eczema went away. If I stay away from wheat products, like when I pulled those out, like just the inflammation went away in my body and I felt better. The aches and pains in my joints and being able to move freely. And like it was so directly correlated that it happened within days, and that's how I knew. And so the action, it drove me to look into it a lot more, like what is this? And I saw really quickly how it is connected. A lot and hours spent researching.
Yes, and I think that's what's so upsetting is that when we get a diagnosis or two or three, a lot of the people that we first trust with that diagnosis doesn't mention, so how's your diet? Or in my case, I actually thought I was eating pretty healthy. I mean, when you said taking away dairy, I took away dairy as well, but I had been trained that, there's nothing bad about dairy, that dairy's good for you, as well as other things that I took out that were significant and sensitive to me, such as eggs. I thought that was pretty healthy as well. And so always shocking to me are health journeys and how little, at first, how little idea is put on what we put into our mouth is directly correlated to what's happening to our body. So tell us a little bit. Now, you're at the event, it was strictly vegetarian, or maybe I've got the wrong word, maybe it's vegan. Let's describe first the difference between the two.
Yeah, we actually went vegan with that. Yes, we did.
Okay. And it was fantastic food. I have to say I'm more of an omnivore, but it was fantastic, amazing food. So first describe, what is the difference between a vegetarian and a vegan, just so we can have the right descriptions out here?
Well, a vegan, generally, it comes from an ethics standpoint where they don't want to consume any animal products in any way, shape, or form. So not only do they eliminate animal products such as cheese and dairy products, yogurt, all of that, besides the actual meat component to it, they eliminate all that from their diet. But generally, the term vegan also associates a lifestyle with it. So they tend not to wear leather shoes, for example, or they won't have, they're very aware of having wool in their life as well. So they just don't want to use any products from an animal source. And a vegetarian is more of an eating, a way of eating, where, and there's all different kinds of combinations to it, but generally a vegetarian just eliminates meat from their diet. And where I kind of fit into that is I don't associate myself being like a vegetarian or a vegan. I actually stick very firmly to the term plant-based whole foods, because what I do and what I stand for and what I teach, it's not about eliminating. It is about embracing all the health benefits of all the foods that are available to us. And when you... under that term of us that are plant-based whole foods, it's as much about educating and embracing and welcoming people in as it is about the goal of health. It's not about a lifestyle. Our main focus is first and foremost always health.
Mm, yeah. Oh my gosh, so many questions popped up for me during that time. First off, let's see. My first question would be, I've been drummed in my head since I was little, because I come from a meat eating family line, that if I went plant based, I wouldn't get enough protein. How do you fill that myth number one with a fact?
That is probably the biggest, and I won't say argument, but it's the biggest point people ask me on all the time. And well, first off, no one in my world, and I'm willing to bet no one in your world, has ever been diagnosed with a protein deficiency.
Not that I know.
Never heard of it. Exactly. It's protein is in all our foods. There is not a food out there that doesn't have some component of a protein in it. And we've been kind of falling into this marketing mayhem, for lack of a better word, on everyone needs protein. We need more and more and more protein. And it's absolutely infuriating, because it comes from such a niche market of the people that needed more protein. And that started way back in the 60s. Origin of it was back in the 30s when it was connected to the war. But it was back in the 60s, I believe, where it was connected to a bodybuilder down in California. And he was looking for a quick way to increase his protein, because he knew that the increase would help him with his purpose of bodybuilding and gaining those mass muscles. And so you can see through history, and then the 70s hit and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and so the protein drinks started to become more and more popular, and it's just now exploded. Protein is in absolutely everything we eat. Lentils are comparable in protein count to chicken. A 1 cup of lentils is comparable to 3 ounces of chicken, and needless to say, you're a lot more satisfied with a cup of lentils.
Yeah, a cup of lentils would be quite filling.
Exactly. The average typical person would have a hard time eating a cup of lentils in combination with a complete meal. That's a lot.
When you said that, that's what I thought too. I don't think I could eat a whole cup of lentils. I would be so satisfied with maybe a half a cup.
Exactly. And so there's also that misconception of we need vast amounts of protein. And that's where the whole marketing thing, and everyone's so obsessed with getting, you know, if a little is good, more must be better. And that is not the case with protein whatsoever. And even the World Health Organization, they recommend that we don't exceed 10%. An average woman, and I work mainly with women of the age of 40 and over. And women in our age bracket, 5% of our calories coming from protein is usually sufficient. And you're not feeling deprived or hungry or anything like that. So it's just, it's real marketing, and we need to step away from the marketing of needing protein.
Okay, so myth number one dispelled. Marketing. Marketing's the answer. Okay. But then I have this other question about when I was at the farmer's market, there were such a huge variety of things that obviously I didn't know the first thing about. Let's say, I know you're in Calgary, and what shocked me about Calgary, you know, I knew it, but I really came home when I was there that, you know, it's light so often this time of year. It was like 11 o'clock before it started to get dark, and it was light at 4 a.m. So I'm assuming that your types of vegetables in that colder climate is different than my type. Is it better to eat sort of what's locally grown in our own soil, or is it okay to wander far afield and buy things or eat things that are from, like, I don't know, Bali or something? What happens when we, what's the better way to eat?
I think it's a combination of both. Being in the northern climate, for sure, we are, if we were to eat completely local, our variety of food would be greatly diminished. And when you look at different locations on where you eat, your diet naturally changes. Like if you compare Inuit, for example, who have an incredibly high fat content in their diet, and when you compare it to an indigenous person that lives in Costa Rica, for example, or Brazil or Colombia, where it's mostly a plant-based diet, so your location determines the level of fat and carbohydrates and stuff that you can naturally assimilate without any disease creeping in. So you have to keep that in mind as well. But just for the fact that, you know, the northern climate, we rely on, and bringing up that food from California, the vast majority of our produce comes in from California, Arizona, and some from Mexico. Our 100-mile radius where we want to eat local, unfortunately for us up north, it's a lot bigger than 100 miles for us to get a really nice variety and still maintain that balance of not being the Inuit culture and not being the indigenous tropical culture. We have to find that middle ground. And unfortunately, whoever deemed that 100-mile local didn't realize that when you break it up into geographic areas on the map, it's a little more than 100 miles.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, that it's good to eat local because of the soils have the right kind of bugs and all for your gut and all that good stuff. But I'm thinking, even here in Oregon, where I am today, during the summer, vast amounts of great produce. But during the winter, we're limited to things that are cold if we're going to do that. Cabbages, kales, squashes. You know.
And we're very similar as well. Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said about harnessing those particular products, and we need to dedicate a lot more of our diet to those local products, and for complete and balanced health, incorporating those cabbages and kohlrabi and stuff that is local to us, and having those equally as much as we eat those mangoes and papayas. There's got to be a balance between, and that's where we're going to have the environmental balance, we're going to have the health balance, and it's definitely, you pull on one string and everything in the world changes.
I love that. We need to take a quick commercial break on that thought. You're pulling one string and everything changes. That's true about life in many areas besides our nutrition and our eating, but we'll be right back after this commercial break with Susan Moore.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And today we are here with Susan Hoy from culinaryskillsandnutrition.ca. She's an amazing chef who has devoted her life to teaching us all about plant-based eating and how healthy it is for us. And I'm just going to throw this out here, Susan, because we've been talking about our own health journeys and where to find the foods and a lot of interesting things like that. But I have to be honest, I'm intimidated by a lot. As you know, I even took what we used to call 4-H cooking classes and home ec cooking classes. But to be honest, I think we cooked more Toll House cookies and brownies. But it's fascinating to me. What do you suggest we start when we're just intimidated by, I'll say, the kohlrabi? I didn't even know what that was till the other day, and I saw it. It looked gorgeous. I have no idea how it tastes, and when I asked the farmer, tell me more, he just kind of laughed. But how do we get over our intimidation of all these vegetables that we're like, I don't know?
It really is, and as cliche as it sounds, take one vegetable at a time and discover it. I challenge a lot of my clients when I start working with them that every week you have to buy one new thing from the produce section. Because so often we walk into the grocery store to do our weekly shop and we buy the same 5 to 7 fruit and vegetables in the produce section. And we walk past things and we think, oh, I wonder what that is and what do I do with it? And so the first step is just to do it. Go through whatever it is you wonder the most about, pick it up. Ask your farmer if you're at the market or your produce vendor. There's usually someone in the section filling the shelves. Say, what can I do with this? And they will give you at least one idea on how to cook it, where to add it to. And then challenge yourself. You can't sit back on the couch and say, someone do it for me. You have to have the initiative. Eat it one way, and if you don't care for it or you absolutely love it, the next day, cook it a different way. Take half of that kohlrabi the first day and make a little bit of a salad with it. Use it like a cabbage in coleslaw. The second day, pop it in the oven and roast it like you would roasted the potatoes and see the difference. Like, and you can adapt almost any cooking method to almost any vegetable. And you're going to have some stuff that just like, oh my God, I never want to have that again.
Been there, done that.
Exactly. And sometimes it's the same vegetable. You just have to cook it in a different way. And so you have to just really be willing to challenge yourself and say, okay, I want this for myself. I want health for myself.
Well, let's share with the audience. If you were to compare kohlrabi to something else, what would that be? So they just got an idea of it, maybe what you could exchange it for, maybe sort of what it might taste like.
Kohlrabi is really adaptable, and it is similar in texture to like a turnip or a rutabaga, mm-hmm. But the taste is very much like a cabbage. And it's watery and it's crispy and it's refreshing to eat it raw. And so if you were to use it into a recipe, you could, anywhere that you would use cabbage, you could use kohlrabi. So, and whether you're making a stew or whether you're making a salad, you could use it in the same way. You can use the leaves of the kohlrabi. They come with these big, long shoots of leaves. And you can use those for your wraps like you would use collard greens or lettuce wrap or kale for that matter, and you can use it to make a wrap as well.
Oh, really? I didn't know. When it was at the market, it was just stalks, but they cut off the leaves. How cool is that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, quite often that happens, yeah.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay. Well, then I want to go on to another question that just has me baffled, and maybe it's just me. I'm telling you. I've honestly tried like 3 or 4 different types of kale, like dragon kale, and and the farmers are like, oh, yeah, try it. It's great. Saute it with garlic or, you know, whatever. I'm sorry. I've tried it raw. I've tried it sauteed. I've tried baking and faking it into stuff. Am I the only one that doesn't know what to do with kale and make it edible?
No, you are not the only one, for sure. A lot of people get hung up on it. And for as good as it is for us and for as much as I encourage everyone to eat it, sometimes there is a food that you just won't get along with. Not that your body doesn't get along with it, like, but for whatever reason you don't enjoy the taste of it or the texture of it or anything like that. Rest assured there's hundreds of other fruits and vegetables you can eat instead of it. But if you wanted to like really conquer kale, if you will, then it's about the little tricks that you can cook with it. So many people don't realize that because kale is such a dense vegetable, the cellulose in it is so strong that it needs a little love before you eat it. You need to spend some time massaging it before you do anything with it, and that will change.
Okay, wait.
It will change the process.
What do you mean massaging it? Am I sitting there in front of the TV with a little oil, just, you know, fingering it? Okay, start.
That's exactly it. A sprinkling of salt and just the tiniest little bit of oil. But if you want to stay away from oil, you can eliminate it. You don't have to use it. It just helps break it down and helps the salt work into the texture or the cellulose of the kale. But yeah, you cut it up into bite-sized pieces and you spend 2 minutes just massaging it. And that'll break it down. And not only does it break down the cellulose, it makes it taste differently because it cooks differently. A lot of the different nutrients and stuff get released, which change the flavor.
Maybe that, no one told me I had to put on spa music and massage my kale. So maybe that's what was wrong with all my different tries, you know, regardless of what the farmer said. So there you go. This great tip number two, massage your kale. Now, do you have a favorite oil for massaging your kale, or does it really matter whether it's olive or avocado, or does it really matter?
Any oil that you have on hand would work, depending on the way you're going to cook it. If you're going to use a high heat method, like in the saute pan, you want to stay away from a few of the different oils. You want to be very careful on what oil you use, though. I spend a lot of time educating people on how our foods are manufactured, and oil is one of those things that if you've got an autoimmune disease or you're sensitive, you have a lot of sensitivities to foods, oil is something that you can look at as a first step. And the reason that is because of the refining practices that are used to make our refined oils. Take your vegetable oils or avocado oil. That's actually one that I need to research a little more into just yet to be able to answer specifically about avocado oil. But the process that our oils go through, you really want to avoid a refined oil. Yes, they're shelf stable and they're clear and they're quote unquote light tasting. But what they have to do to our oils and the solvents and the extracts that they put into them to make that happen is so detrimental to our health that there's an argument to be had on how much nutrition you're getting out of that couple of cups of kale because of all the stuff that's coming along with the refined oil. I know here in Canada, and we tend to be just a hair further ahead than the FDA in the United States, but as far as I know, the FDA and Health Canada are on par with how we refine our oils. And those solvents that I'm talking about that's getting used are like bleaches and solvents, and they go as far as using hexane to get some more product to refine the oil to get a better bottom line on the amount of oil they're excreting from the seed. Like, and so it's really extreme on the processes they're using for refined oils. So if you're going to use an oil, go with an unrefined cold press. It's not going to be exposed to all these solvents, and you'll still be able to enjoy and get the complete 100% health benefits from whatever it is you're eating.
And here in Oregon, we're starting to develop olive groves, so I just love it that I can get cold-pressed local olives about an hour away from my home here in Oregon. So I just love it. I can go to
the oil. We just got our first one in Canada, too.
Yeah, I could just go to my own olive grove and say, and they'll say, this was just pressed. I'm like, how cool is that? So I enjoy that too.
Yeah.
What was shocking to me was I thought I had tasted olive oil until I went there. And then I'm like, oh, okay.
That's exactly it. And when I'm helping my clients and I'm explaining this to them and they taste unrefined oil for the first time, and I tend to use sesame oil a lot. It's just my preference, and for no good reason, just that it's my personal taste. And when people taste it, they can't believe that it actually tastes like something because it's got essence of in it, and it's got all the zinc and the iron and the chlorophyll, and it's got all those elements, and you can taste
I'm glad you bring that up, because when I'm thinking of some of what I'll call the commercial sort of mixed cooking oils or frying oils, you're right, they really don't taste like anything, like an olive oil or so interesting. So that's how you know, and one of the ways you know what to taste like. I think the other thing too, just for myself, I'm sure being a chef like you are, it doesn't matter. But for myself, I always buy in really small quantities because I find that it goes rancid before I use it all up. And I didn't know what rancid oil tasted. Well, I did know what it tasted like, but I didn't know it was rancid oil until I started following these new friends of mine that have the olive grove. And then I was like, oh, I get the difference now. So I think that's really important to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Just these little things we don't know.
Yeah. And that's because of the way our food's been, like, all for the last 30, 40 years, that's the standard of food that we've been eating. And so for so many of us, unless we really pay a lot of attention, we don't know that it should taste any different.
I know, that's sad. That's really sad. I'm thinking about how I was raised in the era of manufactured food or processed food was the rage, and it was sold to us, marketing, as the healthy alternative for the busy people. And so now, just here it is many years later, I'm learning all about maybe that was just marketing. So
when you correlate, and it's that cause and an effect aspect to it, but when you look at the correlation between the change in our food to manufactured foods, and the correlation with autoimmune disease specifically, but you could go into diabetes and all kinds of other stuff as well, but autoimmune disease specifically, and the increases they're so connected like take celiac disease, for example, like it's the fastest growing condition in North America, not just Canada, but in North America when it comes to autoimmune disease. And for it to be raising at such a rapid rate, compared to back in the 70s and 80s when people were just starting to eat this type of food, right? It's so blatant when you look at the statistics.
Right, absolutely. And it's one of those things that we're still studying, all the different effects. And I'm sure there's more studies to come out on the different parts of that is may not just be the gluten, that there's other proteins and other things added to our food chain now that may be affecting our autoimmune condition as well. That's why it's so important to eat. As I know you said to me back in Calgary, you know, the closest from farm to table as you can get and having a nice organic farm, that's the way to eat. Just like...
It absolutely is, because it may not be the wheat in the gluten that we're reacting to. It may be one of the bleaches that they're treating the wheat with that we're reacting to.
Yeah. Oh, so many things they're treating the food with these days. But we don't have time to get in that right now. We're going to take another quick commercial break, and we'll be back with Susan Hoy, and she's going to be sharing with us some other ideas of where we can start. In fact, I wanted to talk to her about these wonderful sauces she made, and I'll say without dairy. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader? have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And today we're talking with Susan Hoy from culinaryskillsandnutrition.ca. She has wonderful Heal Your Health wellness programs, as well as menu planning and what she calls the Simply Living program, as many other great ideas on how to eat healthy. And as we all know, just from all the studies, nutrition and autoimmune play a big part. And I have to put up my hand and be really authentic here, is I thought up until my autoimmune condition diagnosis that I really ate healthy. I mean, I had salads and, you know, I really thought I ate healthy. But then I stopped, met a nutritionist and stopped and took a look at what I was eating. And there were a lot of little hidden things in there that I didn't realize could be causing me problems. And Susan's been sharing some of those. But I wanted to get into some more of the ways to make plant-based diet unintimidating. And when I was with her up in Calgary, she had some of the best sauces. She spiralized her zucchini and had amazing sauces on it. And I'm like, how can this be so good without dairy and cheeses? And I guess dairy is cheese, but anyway, all these different things that I think that go into a sauce. So share with us that spiral zucchini, well, I'll call it in air quotes, pasta dish you shared with us. That was so fantastic. And it looked pretty simple. I mean, when I asked you in the kitchen, it sounded pretty simple, so.
It is literally a 5-minute dish. Like, it is 1,000 times easier than making a traditional Alfredo sauce. 1,000 times easier, let me tell you. And so, like, literally 5 minutes and you're done. And it's made out of cashews, raw cashews. And raw cashews will replace any dairy product, hands down, across the board. I even use it to make my own cheese.
Now, does raw cashews have, do we have to worry about, some nuts I've been told have a lot of fat and things like that. With when we go plant-based, do we have to worry about our nut consumption like that and putting it in sauces and things?
In my opinion, no. Because what we're doing is we're swapping out the saturated fats of animal products and replacing it with nuts. And when you think about when you're eating an animal, a portion of animal meat of whatever kind, you're eating, a serving is 3 ounces. Not many typical North American people will eat 3-ounce portion of meat.
I was going, no, that's they're probably eating 2 to 3 servings if that's the case.
Most people do at least 2 servings at a meal. And so when you compare that in saturated fats to the fats that are in your cashews, cashews don't even compare. And then you take into effect that you don't eat as many cashews. Like, to feed that 35 people that I fed at the retreat, I used a cup of cashews.
You're kidding. Just 1 cup of raw cashews.
Yes.
That was it.
Yes. Oh, sorry, my mistake. My mistake, sorry. It was 1.5 cups. Yeah. And so, yes.
Well, that's still minimal.
Exactly. And when you compare that to a serving of meat that you would have been serving, like, there's no comparison in fats. So although you do want to be mindful, of course, they are high in fats, the nutrients in them far outweigh any concerns. And the smaller amounts that you're eating, again, for most people, is not a concern either.
Okay, so you have, well, for 35 people, we'll just say a cup because I'm sure most of us aren't feeding 35 people. how do we make this delicious sauce? Because my granddaughter loves, she's 4.5, so I let her, with my supervision, you know, turn the handle on the spiralizer.
Yeah.
And so we love to make those zucchini noodles. How do we make this delicious cashew sauce? Because you said it's simple, right?
It is super simple. What you have to do is you have to soak your cashews. And if you've got a high-powered blender, like a Nutribullet or a Vitamix, you can soak your cashews for about an hour. If you have just the average run-of-the-mill blender that you've had for 20 years, that will work too. You just have to soak your cashews a little bit longer. Throw them in the morning before you go to work, or keep them in your fridge on whatever day you get your groceries. Put some in the fridge and just leave them sitting there. So when it comes time to make your sauce, you drain your cashews, you put them into the blender, you add a garlic clove, a half a lemon, a little bit of Dijon or grainy mustard, and some nutritional yeast, salt, pepper, and some Worcestershire sauce if you want. You don't have to. You blend it up until it's creamy smooth and you're done.
That it was delicious. So yeah, I think I'll get that transcribed for everybody on the blog so they can read that.
I have a recipe with it, and it's actually with the zucchini, and I can pass it on to you, and you can post it for all your listeners.
Oh, fantastic, because that was delicious. My goodness. So that to me shows how simple it is. I think everybody can figure that out. It's no different than, actually, as you said, easier than making an Alfredo sauce, because I don't have to sit there and stir it and wait for the cheese to blend and, you know, whatever. Not scorching the milk and all that kind of good stuff. So share with us a couple more ideas that you find that most people say when they first hear about this idea, I can do that. What are some other great ones that you've done that you say, yeah, that's a good place to start? So we've got this fantastic, we'll say in air quotes, zucchini cashew pasta dish. And you actually added a few other vegetables to it. If I remember right, there was some asparagus and some spring peas. And so it was sort of like a Alfredo.
Primavera, yeah. And primavera just means vegetables. So it was just a medley of what was available at the grocery store.
Yeah, okay. So it's super easy to do, guys. Give us a couple others to starters, non-intimidating, so we can really have some immediate successes.
Another really good one is if you tend to enjoy dishes that are made out of ground meat, like ground beef, ground turkey, the easiest thing you can do is you can still make the very same dish. You don't have to change anything else for your first try. Is all you have to do is swap out your ground meat for lentils. Use brown or green lentils. And the texture of them, the flavor of them, the way they react in a dish is identical to ground meat. And so all you have to do is boil up your lentils as you would. It's a depending on what your purpose is, about a 2-to-1 ratio. So if you use 1 cup of lentils, you use 2 cups of water, you boil them up so they're soft. And then you use those cooked lentils in place of your cooked ground beef. And if you take, for example, you were going to make tacos, and you would take those cooked lentils and then you would saute them in a frying pan with a touch of oil, if you like, add a cut up diced onion and your taco seasonings, your cumin and your coriander and your chili powder, a little bit of salt and pepper. And there you have your ground meat to make your tacos, or you can make shepherd's pie the very same way.
Wow, who doesn't like tacos, right? And if you can make the meat tacos, it sounds like you can make lentil tacos too. I actually like lentils. I think they're often overlooked. People look at them and don't realize that they're not any harder to cook than rice.
Yeah,
I think, although some people might be intimidated by rice,
but so far, yeah.
I find that it's not any harder than to cook by rice. What are some other tips as we're going to plant-based should we be aware of? I mean, what are some of the first things that you started to notice about your health that began to change? I've heard people tell me that it didn't take, as you mentioned with your sensitivities and losing weight, it didn't take long. But I've heard other people mention to me, you know, it didn't take long for a whole host of health changes to begin to happen.
The first thing everyone notices is their energy. And within like a couple weeks, you will be looking for a new outlet to use up some energy. And, you know, myself being a business owner, I just kind of channel it into my business. I can, you know, I can get through the day. I don't have those afternoon slumps at all, which was huge for me, because even as a child, I remember having that 1 o'clock nap with my grandma on the couch after lunch all the time. And I just thought it was in my DNA that I was just a person that needed an afternoon nap, you know, like a quick 5-7 minutes and I was good. But eating plant-based that is completely out the window. Like, there is no need for that afternoon slump. I'm not craving anything in the afternoons or anything. So that, for me, was the first thing. And it often is one of the first things my clients notice as well. Their energy is through the roof.
And one other thing that I noticed was that I don't get as hungry as often, which I thought was really fantastic too. It seems to stick around longer.
And that is because your body's getting the nutrients that it craves to operate. And so your body's not telling you to eat something, I'm missing something, I need some fuel, because you've given it to it. And then the added benefit of fiber. Fiber fills you up. It keeps you satisfied.
And it also helps move things along, we'll just say metaphorically. Yeah, we'll say that too. And so, okay, well, you know, this has been great. What are some other thoughts when people are just saying, okay, you know, this sounds all well and good, but it still sounds like a lot of work. But you have some great programs that you share, all about everything from menu planning to, I think you call it Heal Your Health. What are some other tips that you always share with us newbies out there as you begin to convince us that this is the way to go?
To look at it as if it's a marathon and not a sprint. Don't try and change everything all at once. Little steps, make one change, get comfortable with it, and make it work for you, and then take the next step. Don't overwhelm yourself with too much information, too many changes, because you're setting yourself up for overwhelm and ultimately failure. If you take it slow, realize that, you know, one change at a time is all your body can handle and all you emotionally and mentally can handle, then it's a lot easier. Don't think you have to change everything all at once, unless your life is on the line. Sometimes it's necessary, but for the average person, one step at a time.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. And you're right, though. When I got the diagnosis, I felt my life was on the line. So it was a pretty radical jump.
Yes.
But finding good support such as yourself really helped that along, to find that support. You did mention something in the previous answer and then here that got me to thinking, though, is I'll tell you, the hardest part for me was the cravings, especially things that were, I was emotionally attached to. Like if I had an emotional upset, I used to really love to go to the cookies. Mm-hmm. Or I'll just say some sort of baked product. What is your tips for getting over those real sugar addict kinds of moments when we're like, okay, this all sounds well and good, but give me a cookie.
There's two components to a sugar craving. And there is the emotional component, and then there's the physical component. And if you regularly eat sugar, your body has a physical reaction to wanting more sugar. Those microbes in your gut biome are screaming at your brain, give me sugar, I want a cookie, whatever it is. For that energy is connected to it as well. But if you can get yourself off of sugar, and after that initial 5 to 7 days, depending on what your intensity of use is.
How addicted you are.
Exactly. And once you get over that initial craving and your body, your gut biome is no longer saying, give me sugar, it is an emotional response. And excuse the language, but if you're still eating sugar, craving sugar, and you've done that detox and you've really looked at all the foods, you're not getting any hidden sugars, then like I say, excuse the language, but deal with your shit. It's not about the food. It's not about the sugar. It's your emotional reaction to saying, I want to comfort myself. And so often than not, our whole life, when we were children, oh, have a cookie, you'll feel better. You scraped your knee, have a cookie.
Family lineage, that's the statement. You know, if we had to put something on our tombstone, it would probably be, have a cookie, you'll feel better.
Exactly. And so, so many times, and I even find myself doing that, even after all these years, I will hit a hurdle, I'll have a hard call with a client, I'll just be stuck on something in my business. And I'll find myself walking away from the computer and heading to the kitchen. And it's like, oh, what am I doing here? I don't need any of this. And then it's that emotional component. If it's not, if you
right.
Physical, it's purely emotional.
So true. One of the things I used to do, though, as I was working my way through, and I have to be honest, it took me longer than 7 days, but that's okay. I got through it, was I would sit and meditate, and I don't know if this is a great metaphor for most people, but I'm thinking of the Rocky Horror Picture Show of that green plant, that Venus flytrap thing, and I would sit there and meditate that these little microbes in my gut were this thing, you know, and it was screaming, feed me, feed me. And for me, it made it so distasteful because I was thinking of that whole weird movie and the whole thing.
That is perfect. I love that.
Yeah, it was, anyway, the way my meditations and metaphors work, folks, it may not work for you, but you find the right thing to work through, and I found that the meditation on the process, visualization on the process, got me through the whole project here. We just need to take one quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to learn more about Susan's programs and how she can help you too. So stick around, we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And today we're talking with Susan Hoy. She's just a renowned chef out of Canada who shares, her passion is just natural foods, and she says plant-based diets. And she's been sharing not only the long-term health benefits of eating a plant-based diet, but how simple and easy it really is, encouraging us to change our eating habits. And I have to say, from my standpoint, even if you think you're eating well, keep a food journal, because you'll be surprised what you're putting in your mouth, unless you do it consciously every day. So Susan, share with us the way you work with people. I know you, not only are you a professional chef doing retreats like where I met you, but you also help one-on-one individuals learn how to eat plant-based diets and to rapidly change their health.
Absolutely. And that is the majority of what I do, is I work one-on-one with clients. And I do that through a combination of ways, through cooking classes where I'm working side by side with them in their kitchen to teach them a few of those basics. And then we move from that concept into menu planning, and we're doing 24/7 interaction back and forth where I'm holding their hand through those difficult times. It's through education as well. So there's my weekly program. They have a component to it where they have 24/7 access to me, and they get menu guidelines as well as educational stuff. I spend so much time educating my clients on what it is they're eating. And I use all my professional training as an agrologist, as a chef, as being part of the food manufacturing industry for so many years. And I offer that knowledge to really educate you.
Absolutely. She has the Simply Living program, which is weight loss, right?
Yes.
And then Heal Your Health Wellness programs. And you don't work just up in Calgary, that you're able to have Skype calls and do some online or distance distance coaching or distance inspiration for us as well.
Absolutely, yes. I have several clients that I work with remotely. And it's just as intimate as being side by side. The only thing that we can't do is be in the kitchen at the same time. But for that, I use FaceTime, and that usually does the trick because I'm right there. I can see what you're doing, see the results. I just can't taste it. But you can decide whether or not it tastes good.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, that just came to me a thought that I have a group where we just have a friend who is clear around the world in New Zealand, and every so often we have a meal together. It's whether I'm eating breakfast and she's eating dinner, doesn't matter. But so I talk about making food fun, take out all of this sort of, I'll say, the pain part of it, even if your diagnosis has you limited on what you can eat. Susan is a wonder. She's the one who can help you discover what it is you can eat as you continue to heal. And from my point of view, you'll realize that you can continue to heal and continue to expand your menu, continue to expand what you eat as you heal. So that's the good part about it. You're not stuck on these very restricted diets for very long if that's part of your autoimmune healing protocol. So thank you so much, Susan, for sharing all your wisdom and the recipes and all of that. It's just been so much fun to learn more about nutrition and that we don't have to be intimidated.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And everyone, we'll have her information up at lifeinterruptedradio.com. Have a great weekend, whatever your adventures. As I say, go, it's summer, go explore some farmers markets and get courageous and let us know. We'll let Susan know how courageous you've been. And so have a great time, whatever your adventures. And as always, enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at sharonsaylor.com/radio gift.
This is the EWN Radio Network.